MechCast, Monday, September 23rd, 2013. Hey, Mech Geeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for Mech Geeks by Mech Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MechCast. Well, I am in the process of recovering from iPhone launch weekend. Wasn't that tiring? Were you out there in line like I was? No, because you were smart, and you stayed at home, and you ordered one, and it's likely on its way to you right now. Well, I was able to get my iPhone 5S after a long toil, long evening at the Apple store in Carlsbad, California. That's one of the stores in my region. I'm lucky. I've got a lot near me, but that's the one I chose to go hang out at. And I'm going to tell you all about that on this episode. Of course, we're going to get into some of the other inline stories and such. We're also going to talk about some of the information that's come out since the devices have been released, some of the new specs and actually the under the hood specs now that we've got takedowns and tear aparts and those sorts of things. Those have been revealed. Some hints and tips and tricks, some updates to Apple TV that went awry. And we're going to talk to a couple of our friends who are also out waiting in line or picking up new iPhone 5S's over the weekend. So we got a lot of stuff to cover for you to get into on this episode. But before we get started, before we get to that, I do want to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors, and that's Smile, makers of Text Expander, among other awesome applications. But I want to talk to you once again about Text Expander because it is probably, well, I can't say my favorite because I like all of them. You really should own everything that Smile makes, but Text Expander is a good choice if you're looking for something to start out with. If you haven't picked up something, check out Text Expander. Anytime that you want to save time in typing out stuff that you might find yourself typing over and over again, Text Expander is a perfect solution for that. So I'm talking about if you're doing tech support, if you find yourself answering emails a lot, even if it's just something as simple as email signatures. I know you can set up multiple ones in the mail applications, but I just have always had them set up as Text Expander snippets. So different signatures for different email accounts, I have little snippets for them, and I type SIG1 and a certain signature prints out. I type SIG2 and another signature. And you can have advanced formatting. You can have rich text formatting in your signatures, and all of that information will expand out. Another cool little trick that you can use is corrections of common typos. Now, Apple's autocorrect, OS X's autocorrect stuff kicks in and works pretty well sometimes, but there's certain situations where that doesn't always work. For some reason, I have this nasty habit of always transposing the O in the A when I type the word download. So I simply set up a little Text Expander snippet with the incorrect version as the key, and it then expands and corrects right into the correct version every time I mistype that. So no more typos, at least on that word. And you can do that for anything that you might typo. And now Text Expander Touch, the version for iOS, has gone version 2.0 and has support for fill-in forms. I told you about fill-in forms on the last ad that I did. It's a really cool feature where you can set up dynamic blocks of text. So it doesn't have to just be static text. You can put in little fill-in areas and fill in variable information as your snippet expands. And that functionality has been expanded to the mobile version for iOS Text Expander Touch. So you can do that. You can sync all your snippets from your Mac to Text Expander Touch, and it even has Dropbox support. So if you're a Dropbox user, you got that in there. And the iOS version is integrated into over 160 of your favorite iOS apps. So chances are, if you have an app that's working with text, it has Text Expander support built into it. So you can use your snippets right inside your favorite iOS apps as well. So if you're not using Text Expander, you really need to try it out now. There are free trials of Smile's Mac applications available on their website. And while you're there, be sure to check out all the other great stuff they have. PDF Pen, Disk Label, PDF Pen for iOS, all really, really awesome stuff. I love having Smile as a sponsor. You should check them out, smilesoftware.com. And a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. So let me see here. Let's think. What was happening this weekend that we as Apple fans might care about? Oh, yeah, they put out a couple of new iPhones this weekend. And actually, we have to say a lot more than a couple because, technically speaking, they sold a gazillion. No, well, actually, really technically speaking, they sold 9 million iPhones in this launch. I don't think we can call it a weekend because they started taking pre-orders on the iPhone 5C back on September 13th. I think they're counting those all the way through the launch day sales as well as online sales for the iPhone 5S. Apple's not being 100% clear about what they're bundling into their 9 million figure, but they put out a press release. I'm assuming it includes everything. Even still, that is a huge number. They set a record for Apple. It's a little bit hard to compare because this time around they have two new iPhones launching on the same day, but it is still a record for the launch for the release of iPhones. One source, as far as how it breaks down, is saying, according to the activations they're tracking, that the iPhone 5S was outselling the iPhone 5C by about 3.5 to 1. That's averaging, I think it was about 3.4 in the U.S. and 3.7 internationally. But if you break out those numbers, if you use those numbers, do a little bit of math on that 9 million figure, that means that Apple sold at launch probably about 6.5 million iPhone 5Ss and another 2.5 million 5Cs. That 6.5 million 5S would beat, I believe, last year's iPhone 5 opening week or launch numbers, which was around, I think, 6 million, if memory is serving me correctly. And Apple also, right before the launch of the new iPhones, put out the new version of iOS, iOS 7, and that is doing phenomenally as well. People are downloading and upgrading iOS 7 in droves, and droves amounts this time around to about 200 million devices already being upgraded to iOS 7, according to Apple. And if that number, well, I'm sure that number is correct because Apple says it is. That number being correct means that they are ahead of the iOS 6 adoption rate, which was a very quick, fast adoption rate. So that's good news for developers who want to develop new apps for some of the new features in iOS 7. Consumers are weighing in on their reactions, and actually it's been mostly positive. It was a pretty big change, but overall I think most people are liking the change. There's still debate over the overall look. Some people don't like the colors, feel it's a little bit too candy-coated or kid-like feeling. iOS 7 has grown on me. I've been using it since the beta because I'm in the developers program, and you get used to it, and a lot of the new features I really like, and I probably couldn't live without. The control center, huge new feature that I really, really love. It's taken me a while. I'm still trying to get used to the swipe down to access Spotlight search. I still sometimes try to swipe to the left to get to that, but we'll get there. You know, there's a little bit of a learning curve, but I think it's becoming the new standard, and we're already seeing, I just saw an article this week that there are a ton of iOS clone themes showing up on Android. So even those folks on the Android side, at least a few of them, are wanting to get a little flavor of iOS 7. So it's doing really, really well. Back to the iPhones, though, there were long lines worldwide. There was some debate as to, you know, if it was truly worldwide, there were long lines or at every store, but we certainly saw Apple selling out phones quickly. Lines in some locations might not have been as long as for the iPhone 5 launch. I know at the store I was waiting at, it didn't feel quite as long, at least not initially. By opening, though, probably comparable to the iPhone 5 line, and most people in the lines were seeming to line up for the iPhone 5S. Not a lot of people waiting in line for the 5C. That may have been because they took pre-orders online and you could get those shipped to you. It may also just be this general ratio of 3.5 to 1 iPhone 5S versus 5C. My personal opinion on the 5C is I think it's going to be a really slow starter. It's not the kind of device that early adopters are going to jump on, but I think as consumers start doing their holiday shopping, they start getting into the retail stores, when they see this thing, because I had a chance to actually get my hands on one, it is a beautiful device. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later when I give you some of my impressions of the iPhone 5S. But I think consumers are really going to flock to the 5C. And I would not be surprised if when Apple gives out their quarterly numbers, that it actually turns out outselling the 5S overall. you've probably already heard on the 5S at the retail stores, the gold color was, well, as rare as gold. It was in extremely low supply at all locations. As predicted, most of the carrier stores, if not all the carrier stores, didn't seem to have any gold models, and Apple retail stores themselves had very, very few. As a matter of fact, at the store that I was waiting at, I think they had a total of 4 gold phones, 2 AT&T and 2 Verizon models. So those went very, very quickly. If you weren't one of the first people in line, you weren't getting a gold iPhone. Wall Street Journal said Apple's suppliers were immediately ordered to then increase production on the gold models by 33% after Apple kind of saw what was happening on launch day. There's some theories being thrown around. We'll maybe talk about it more on future episodes of the MacCast. Let me know what you're hearing. But you know, one of the early theories that was being thrown out there was that Apple might have just been feeling out the new color. They weren't really sure how well consumers were going to respond to the new gold color. Obviously, I think right now, just informally by the people I was talking to in line, friends and people I've been talking to leading up to the launch, gold seems to be the color that everybody wants. I don't know if it's just because it's new, it's hip, people really like it. I personally was opting for the new space gray color, which I really, really like. And again, more on that here in a minute. But online orders went very, very fast as well. 12 midnight Pacific time, I think Apple started taking orders. If you weren't in there right away, you quickly saw the ship times on iPhone orders slipping from 1 to 3 day ship times to a 7 to 10 day ship time. Gold models were the first to drop back to October ship times. I think now most phones, if you order online, are in that October shipping time range. The early orders, interestingly, the delivery dates, even though it said it was going to ship in 1 to 3 days, delivery dates on orders were saying that they would deliver by September 27th to October 2nd, at least in the States. And you note that's like 10 days or so from your actual order date or from the actual ship date of your order. So you're looking at 10 to 13 days, something like that, to actually get your iPhone. That was looking pretty grim, although today I think we started hearing reports of consumers' phones already shipping and them getting delivery dates as soon as September 25th. So Apple looks to be beating the expectations on iPhone 5S delivery times. So some of you, if you place your order online early, you might be getting those phones this week. And I'd love to hear from you, hear your thoughts and impressions after using it, playing around with some of the new features, the new speed and the touch sensor and all that stuff. So chime in, shoot us an email, maccast@gmail.com. In China, you know, there was a lot of concerns about the pricing on the iPhone, particularly the iPhone 5C, which everybody thought was going to be the lower cost iPhone, that it suddenly wasn't low enough in terms of a price for the China market. Well, in China, the carriers have gotten creative and stepped in, and they are putting heavy subsidies, and in some cases, full subsidies, on iPhone 5S and 5Cs. As a matter of fact, China Unicom is subsidizing it to the point where you can get an iPhone 5S or 5C for free. The effective upfront price becomes free, but the buyers are being hit with really high monthly costs and contracts that lock them in for at least 30 days, if not 3 years, 36 months. So there's that trade-off to get the free up front, but still, that should provide a solution that at least makes the iPhone approachable for some Chinese buyers. And other carriers are also reportedly offering large subsidies to make the iPhones more attractive to Chinese consumers. And then just this week, we heard some rumors that China Mobile, China's biggest carrier, who Apple's been reportedly in talks with to try and do a deal to actually get the iPhone on China Mobile, that they've already begun readying advertising material for the 3G variant of the iPhone 5S and 5C. Apple and China Mobile have not announced an official deal, but it's expected that they're going to, and that should be huge for both companies, really big for Apple because there's just a huge number of consumers on China Mobile. And we had already heard that 4G TD-LTE had been approved by China's Ministry of Industry and Information and by China's Ministry of Industry and Information Technology. I think I told you about that on the last episode, but the Chinese government has yet to issue the 4G operating licenses, so that's why the advertising material seems to be focused on 3G. It's expected that it will support 4G, and the chipsets are in the iPhones for that, so I would assume consumers purchasing 3G versions of the phones on the different Chinese carriers will be able to just naturally move up to 4G as those carriers roll that technology out. So as far as the specs go on the iPhone 5S, we are getting details now that the phones are out. They're being tore down by places like iFixit. As far as the processor goes, a lot of people wanted to know, is it a quad core? What's the clock speed? How much RAM? It's looking like it's a dual core 1.3 gigahertz CPU with 1 gigabyte of RAM. Many of us were thinking Apple might bump to 2 gigabytes. They might, you know, advance the clock speed a little bit more than that. And so initially it seemed like a little bit of a disappointment, but regardless of the specs are below some of the quad and 8-core CPUs that some of the competition are using. But Anantech did this really thorough review with a lot of benchmarking. I'll have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com. Those guys are crazy when it comes down to testing stuff. But they had a phone early, an iPhone 5S early, and they put it through its paces and once again proved that the data sheet, those little bullet point specs, clock speeds, and things like that, don't tell the whole story and they don't equate to performance, because the A7 processor, that little thing running dual core 1.3 gigahertz but 64-bit and having an operating system optimized for it, it came out on top in terms of performance with all of the current smartphones that are out on the market, and even in some cases bested some of the tablet processors we're seeing coming out. So these things are targeted for tablets, not just smartphones, and the A7 chip that Apple's shipping in the iPhone 5S beat that in some cases. And in the case of browser testing, like Sun Spider testing, it blew the competition out of the water. And it also was able to hold its own, if not best, many of the devices out on the market in terms of the graphics processor, the GPU. And it was rumored before the 5S came out that Apple was going to go with the PowerVR codenamed Rogue processor, and Anantech does think that that is the case. They think it's a variant of the PowerVR G6430 chip, and that the iPhone is the first to have the Rogue technology, PowerVR technology, and the GPU is, again, performing very, very well. It's going to be awesome for gaming and high-end applications, so Apple has done a phenomenal job putting this chip together. Now, leading up to this, many folks thought that Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing might be the company that Apple tapped to build the chips, further distancing themselves away from Samsung. Well, Chipworks did their little magic and pulled apart the processor, looked under the layers, ran it through a microscope, and they discovered, guess what? Samsung is still Apple's chip manufacturer, at least on the A7. And that has not changed. So that was a little bit of a surprise under the hood. And then iFixit, when they did their teardown, they had a hard time actually locating the M7 coprocessor. And in their initial report, they sort of thought that maybe Apple had rolled it inside and packaged it inside the A7 silicon on a chip. But it turns out that Chipworks did find the processor. It was buried underneath this little neoprene-looking cover on one part of the main board, and when they lifted that up, they could see the M7 coprocessor. It's actually an NXP LCP18A1 chip. It's part of the LPC1800 series, which is a high-performing Cortex M3 based microcontroller. So if you're into that sort of chip technology stuff, that's what's under the hood and powering that little M7 coprocessor that's going to be monitoring all of the sensors and taking some of the load off of the CPU, not having to wake it up, and thus allowing us to have a little bit better battery life and do a lot more data collection, real-time data collection. And they're going to have that cool Nike app for monitoring fitness. I think we're going to see a lot of developers taking advantage of some of the technology that the M7 coprocessor opens up. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, all the kinds of different applications and uses of that new chip. And of course, there is an update for iOS 7, specifically for the iPhone 5S or 5C, or maybe not, of course, but there is one that came out, and Apple says it contains simply bug fixes and improvements. One of the stories I was reading reported that there is some sort of fix that addresses an issue with the new Touch ID fingerprint sensor. So if you picked up a new iPhone 5S or 5C this weekend, you probably want to make sure you grab that update. One of the first things that mine did when I plugged it in was tell me when update was available, and it went ahead and downloaded that and applied the patch. Of course, one of the first things that happens when a new iPhone comes out too is that everybody rushes out and wants to destroy it, and meaning that they want to do some drop testings, they want to find out how durable this thing is. Always one of the first companies or one of the first sites on the scene to do this is Android Authority. I think they're in Hong Kong. They go and do these tests. So even before the US stores started selling iPhones, they were drop testing these things and had a video online. I actually watched it as I was standing in line. And in their test, the iPhone 5S fared a little bit better than the 5C. They do a backdrop and then a corner drop, and then a face drop. The 5S and 5C survived all of those. The 5S was able to come out pretty much unscathed on the face down drop, and they do it onto sort of a rough tile floor outside. You know, it's like one of these outdoor locations, and it's got the big rough slate kind of paving stones, so a pretty rough environment. It came out okay. The 5C in the face drop did crack and shatter. That led them to sort of say that the 5C was a little less durable. The back case, the plastic case on the 5C on the backdrop came out virtually unscathed. That thing looks to be pretty durable and rugged. Didn't even seem to have scratches or very visible scratches on it from the video I was looking at. The thing to remember, though, is they did each one of these drop tests only once, so you need to kind of take the results with a grain of salt. You know, different variants depended on slight angle differences. That front glass on the 5C might have survived, whereas the 5S could have shattered. It really is sort of luck of the draw. Square Trade also came out and did their drop testing. Now, in their case, they just do a corner drop using a machine. They also do a water submersion test and sort of this slide test to see how likely your device is to slide off a table. On their corner drop test, it was, once again, the iPhone 5C's screen that cracked while the 5S survived. So if you're worried about that sort of thing, if you're the type of person to drop your phone a lot, you might consider the 5S over the 5C. In the dunk test, underwater submerged test, they both survived, continued to work and play just fine, which was surprising to me. And in the slide test, the 5S slid right off the table. It does some pretty good sliding, folks, so if it's going to be on a smooth surface, the 5C might be a little bit of a better choice for you. But some interesting drop tests. Again, I take them all kind of with a tongue-in-cheek attitude and grain of salt. If you're really concerned about your device, if you're kind of a butterfingers or clumsy, just consider getting a really good durable case. You know, the OtterBox series or the LifeProof cases are pretty good choices for most people. I don't use either of them, so I can't speak to one versus the other, but those seem to be the ones people prefer if they want a really rugged case for their phone. Adds a lot of bulk, but something to consider. And then Apple executives gave some fans a surprise at some local Apple stores in the Cupertino area on launch day. Tim Cook was reportedly at the Palo Alto store shaking hands and meeting and greeting folks who were in line. Eddie Q and Phil Schiller showed up at that new Stanford store that they showed off in the during the special event. They recently revamped that store. It looks gorgeous. If you're in that area, you probably should go check that out. And they were reportedly joined later by Tim Cook and Katie Cotton. If you don't recognize that name, Katie Cotton is Apple's VP of Worldwide Corporate Communications. So they both showed up also at the Stanford store later in the day, and a lot of Apple fans were really excited to see them. A lot of pictures went up on Twitter. Would have been really cool, you know, on being in the Bay Area, you've got those kind of tech celebrities hanging around. You never know who might just show up. Down here, we just get the Hollywood celebrities, and you know, who really cares about those guys? Just kidding. It's just be cool to see some movie stars and some of your favorite TV stars at lining up at Apple stores. But I somehow think they probably don't often do that. They probably get iPhones shipped to them, right? So what do you do if you want one of these new phones and you didn't line up, you didn't go on launch day and order your device? Well, you still got a couple options. You can order online and just go with whatever ship time you're able to get. But Apple is also now allowing you to check inventory at their retail stores, see if they have one available for pickup. They're also doing the in-store pickup, so you can order online and pick up in-store if they have a phone available for you. To use the feature, at least on the U.S. store, I don't know if they've rolled this out internationally. If they haven't, hopefully they will soon. You just go on the Apple Store online, you select the options, the phone you want, the carrier you want, and then over on the right-hand side in the little summary column, there should be a link that says available for pickup. You click on that, enter in your zip code, and it will show you which stores have that model in the with those options available in your area. And you can play around with that and see if you can find one at a local store, maybe order it up, and then just go in and pick it up. So you don't have to wait in line. You don't have to show up there early in the morning. Sometimes that's a good bet, though, too. Just show up at opening. Apple does typically, after a launch, they kind of get new shipments almost every day. I think Mondays are the least likely, but almost any other day during the week, there should be phones showing up. So if you can get there early, get in line when they're opening, you might have a good chance of picking up at a new iPhone 5S. I think the 5Cs are in pretty good supply. I don't think they're too hard to get a hold of. So if you're in the market for an iPhone 5C, maybe particular colors might go in or out of stock. But overall, I think you should be able to pick one of those up pretty easily. And also check your Best Buys and your Targets and your other big box retailers near you. Also, Walmart is selling phones, Radio Shack or The Shack, I guess they're called now. So you have lots of places where you can maybe go pick up an iPhone. I think even GameStop now is selling iPhones. I think I read somewhere crazy. You can get an iPhone almost anywhere these days. But that was sort of how launch day and the launch events went. Again, we're going to be chatting later in the show with a couple of folks about their personal experiences. I'll share my experience. If you want to chime in with your experience, how it went for you and what it was like at your retail store, send along pictures, whatever you like, shoot me an email, maccast@gmail.com. Of course, one of the big new features of the iPhone 5S is that Touch ID fingerprint sensor, and it's supposed to add a whole new layer of security. Of course, everybody's going to be immediately critical and want to take that thing down. And it did not take long for hackers to figure out how to use a lifted fingerprint to actually fool that Touch ID sensor. A couple guys over in, or at least one guy over in Germany, figured out how to do it. It does take a little bit of work. They're saying online that it's quote unquote easy. I'll leave that to you to judge a little bit. But I think this isn't all that simple. First, you need to get a good source fingerprint. And not only that, you need to make sure you get the right finger, whichever finger happens to be keyed in on that phone, because you can put in up to 5 fingers and that is it. So you got to get the right finger. You got to get a good source print. You have to get a high resolution scan of that print at 2400 DPI or higher. I think they used a digital camera in their example, so a 2400 DPI or better digital camera to pick up the original print. Then you have to get it into your software. You have to process it. You have to clean it up. So do all that kind of Photoshop filtering, get it high contrast enough. And then once you get that clean and looking good, you're going to print that out at 1200 DPI, at least, on a transparency film. And you need to make sure that your laser printer that you're printing out with has a special thick toner setting, because this is basically going to be your mold. So I think you have to reverse it, print it out on the film, thick kind of ink laid on a transparency, and then you'll create the fake print by rolling out a thin layer of like latex, or they even said you could just simply use like wood glue. You lay that out, you squish it into all the little pores and stuff like that. You let it set and dry. And then after it's dried, you peel it off. Now you have your little dummy fake fingerprint. You have to attach it to a real finger, because The iPhone's fingerprint sensor does need to, it's capacitive, so you need to have that. You need to breathe on it a little bit, get it a little bit moist so it feels like a real finger, has the texture of a real finger, and then you put that on there, and then hopefully that works and you get in on the first time. If you fail twice with any one fingerprint, you do typically have to put in the passcode. It won't accept that finger anymore. So you could try a different fingerprint. I guess you probably want to have multiples ready, and you could keep retrying. There's also a feature where if you do 10 failed attempts, some iPhones can be set to then erase the data, to basically reset themselves, you know. And so you're going to only have a couple shots of this. So it, you know, it works. They've done it as proof of concept. You can fool it. This turns out to actually be a technique that's been used for a long time on all kinds of different biometric technology. So it really isn't anything new. With a Touch ID sensor, it is more difficult, though, because it requires a higher resolution original than some of the other hacks. So it has to be a better fake than before. But like any physical system, of course, it can be physically hacked if you have the right bits and pieces. It's like if you have a safe that uses a key versus a combination, if you can get the physical key or a copy of the physical key, you can get into the safe. If it's a combination lock, something that's in someone's mind, you're going to hack their mind or get at that information some other way. So there's always a possibility. And as John Gruber pointed out when this story broke, you know, your fingerprint is still harder to hack than a four-digit PIN number. That's going to be easier to figure out. So there's levels of security here. And we've talked about this on the show in the past. Security, there's this whole security versus convenience thing. There's a trade-off. The more convenient a system is, the less secure it's going to be. The more cumbersome it is, likely the higher the security level. So, you know, if you want to run around and memorize some random 24-digit passcode, then you could use that, skip the fingerprint sensor, and that's probably going to be harder to crack than and fool than the fingerprint system. Of course, someone could torture you and get you to give out that information. So, you know, again, what's more difficult? You got to kind of weigh those things. Another thing that came up in this whole story that I just found interesting, I'm not sure it's so much of a concern either. Wired ran an interesting piece noting that unlike a memorized password, with a fingerprint, you may not be able to plead the fifth if authorities ask and want access to your device during an investigation. So you can't avoid self-incriminating yourself, I guess, if you have a physical form of access to the information. So that would be something like a key, or in this case, your fingerprint. I guess there's been some precedent. Again, I'm not a lawyer. This is just something I was reading off a Wired piece that says, with a physical form of access, they can subpoena that, they can get that, and it has to be provided. Whereas, where if it's something that's simply memorized in your mind, you can plead the fifth. You can say, I don't want to divulge that information because it could be, lead to self-incrimination. So that would be a safe combination, or in this case, a passcode to your phone. So if you're really concerned about that kind of stuff, stick with the passcode. Go with a longer passcode. You don't have to use a four-digit PIN. As a matter of fact, something I'm going to do, because the backup to the fingerprint sensor is your code number, I'm seriously considering moving to a longer, more difficult to guess passcode, using not just the four-digit passcode, but a longer passcode, because I don't have to type it in as frequently. I'll be using my fingerprint most of the time to unlock my phone. In the few cases, once in a while, I'll have to pull out that longer code, and it'll be more secure. If someone does get access to my device, they'll have to be reliant of putting in the longer and knowing the longer passcode, or hacking in the longer passcode. So that, I think, even makes it more secure. I think there's a lot of people, though, that want Apple to enable a two-factor version of the Touch ID sensor, which I think they should, where you have to put in the fingerprint and then also provide some sort of passcode. You got two layers of security there, something physical and something known, and that would offer even better security for our iOS devices. And there was even this $16,000 prize being assembled for the first person to hack Touch ID. So this guy in Germany did win that prize. Unfortunately, what he's going to get is probably a little less than 16,000, something more in the 6,000 range, because the main pledger, the guy who said he'd give $10,000, backed out after the hack was determined to be successful. Does that seem kind of jerkish to you? Seem pretty jerkish to me. I don't know the full details, so why he backed out or suddenly reneged on his pledge, not really sure the specifics, but it seems like he should have to cough that up, because the YouTube video, what was shown, does sort of prove the concept, and I haven't seen if it's been confirmed. So maybe that's the thing. Maybe he wants to see independent confirmation that the hack actually does work, but it seems likely that it does. A lot of reports, again, noted that this kind of hack has been successfully performed on biometric systems before. There were a few other security concerns that emerged, actually just some bugs that allow users to access information from your lock screen. We've seen these kinds of hacks and bugs surface before. Luckily, in the past, Apple has been pretty quick about responding to them. It sounds like that's what they're going to do in this case. But I'll just let you know what a couple of the hacks are. One gives you access to the full photo library, and not only that, but the ability to email and send photos to social media services. This one works by taking advantage of a bug in the control center from the lock screen. So you swipe up, you access control center, you open up the clock application, and then while the clock is open, you hold down the sleep-wake button until you see the slide to power off option and also the cancel button. Then you tap the cancel button before it fully closes down, double-click on the home button. And what that does is that brings up the application switcher, and you can swipe through it. You can actually see all of the applications that were open and in the background, but really the only apps that you have access to are the ones that would normally be available from Control Center. And that includes the camera application. The problem here, though, is that when you access the camera app in this way, it gives you access to the full camera roll, all the pictures that are in the camera roll, and also gives you access to the sharing functions, two features that you're typically not able to access when you're accessing the camera app from the lock screen. So there's where the bug is. And the problem here is that you can send an email. So you could snap your own pictures of things, maybe falsify, you know, you could shoot incriminating evidence against somebody and send that off to their social media, email it off to who knows where from their phone. You need physical access again, so there's, you know, a couple caveats to this hack, but still a pretty big concern. And I did try this one myself and was able to confirm it on my iPhone 5, on my iPhone 5S. So it is an issue. Apple is reportedly working on it. All things D confirmed. Apple said, yes, we're aware. We're working on a fix for this patch. And if you want to protect yourself, the Mac Observer's Brian Chaffin wrote a good piece on the issue. And he mentioned that if you go into the settings on your iOS device, under Control Center settings, you can actually turn off access from the lock screen for the Control Center. So until Apple issues a patch, if you're concerned about this hack, go ahead and just turn Control Center off on the lock screen. Again, it removes a nice convenience from your phone, but adds that layer of protection. So what did we just say about that trade-off between convenience and security? Here it is cropping up again. It comes up over and over again. And then there was another hack discovered from the lock screen that allows you to make calls without unlocking your device. The way this one works is you access the emergency call screen from the lock screen. So when you slide to unlock, one of the options is emergency call. From that screen, you're supposed to just be able to call an emergency services number, something like 911, and no other number. Well, in this case, if you enter a real number and then just repeatedly start tapping the call button, eventually what happens is it throws up an Apple logo. It looks like the system actually crashes or maybe goes through a slight reboot cycle, and then it actually connects the phone call and will allow you to make the phone call. So once again, you need physical access to the person's device, but it could allow you to make phone calls on someone else's device even though the device is locked. And I tried doing this one on my iPhone 5S running 7.0.1. Wasn't able to do it, but I was able to recreate the hack on my iPhone 5 running iOS 7.0. So I don't know if it was patched in 7.01. Again, Apple spokesman came out and said they are aware of this bug as well and are working on a fix for it. So hopefully Apple will push out a security update pretty quick to close these two security holes. And then Apple did release an update for Apple TV owners. Owners of Apple TV 2nd generation and 3rd generation, there's a new update out, 6.0. It actually includes the new features like iTunes Radio, AirPlay from iCloud. So that's the ability to actually play and stream movies and TV shows directly from your iCloud account, even if you have them on your device. So friends and people can come over if they have a movie and it's in their iTunes account. They can authenticate through your Apple TV. They can play the movie, but it'll actually stream it down from iCloud. It doesn't have to send it over directly from their device. Also, iCloud Photos and Videos, those things replace PhotoStream and the iTunes Music Store, so you can now make music purchases directly from your Apple TV, and that really cool new conference room mode. So that's the thing that throws up a screen with a passcode and things like that, so that if you go into a conference room and there's an Apple TV, you can AirPlay your presentations and things like that easily to the conference room setup. That was released on Friday and then reportedly was pulled. I don't know if it was over the weekend or on Friday. There was supposedly a bug that was causing it to actually brick some Apple TVs during the update. There were also some reports of issues with Wi-Fi. What was interesting was that Sunday night, I needed to update my Apple TV. I went to play some content and it told me I needed to download and get the update. I had to hook mine into iTunes and pull the update down. It may have been because I was previously running the iOS or the Apple TV beta version. Again, I'm in the developer program and I had been playing around with the beta version. So I was able to pull down the Apple TV update, even though they said it had been pulled from the Apple Store. I don't know when it was pulled. So it must have been pulled between sometime Sunday night and Monday morning. And then today, Monday, the new version is now up. So they've reissued a supposedly fixed version. It's still labeled Apple TV Software 6.0, but the build number is 11A502. I guess the pulled version's version number was 11A570E. So if you have that on your Apple TV, you probably want to run your update. Just go into the Apple TV software settings menu and run the software update so that you make sure you have the latest updated and patched version. And then finally, when are we going to see Apple's next event? Well, we're already getting rumors that it may be happening on Tuesday, October 15th. As far as what Apple might announce, it's believed that there's going to be new iPads, both the fifth generation full-size iPad as well as the new iPad mini, possibly also new Macs. I would assume the Mac Pro launch date and pricing and all those details would be announced. There may be new Haswell MacBook Pros, maybe an update for Haswell iMacs, and even updated Mac Minis. It'll be interesting to see if they go Haswell on those also. OS X Mavericks should make its appearance, and we should also get its final release and shipping date. And there is a small rumor pointing to an update to the Apple TV hardware, the set-top box hardware. On that one, I'm just not really sure what Apple could do to it. I don't think that Apple's going to do a full-fledged TV at the next event, but a new Apple TV box, you know, what new features and functionality might be in there, I have not a clue. The third generation Apple TV seems just fine to me, but if you have an idea, send me a comment. As far as the updates to the iPads, the fifth generation iPad should, again, get the styling of the current iPad mini, the thinner bezels, same color schemes. It's believed it'll get the new space gray color, going from the black to the space gray. Also the silver and white. No word on whether or not we'll see a gold iPad, either in the mini or the full-size version. That, I think, could happen too, though. Apple likes to standardize their colors across their different product lines. So maybe not, with the shortage on gold, who knows? And I say that very tongue-in-cheek. But the iPad mini is supposed to finally get its Retina display. A lot of people have been waiting and waiting for that update to the iPad mini, so that's fully expected to happen. And there is a rumor now that both iPads could get the Touch ID fingerprint scanning home buttons that are in the iPhone 5S. That would be a really cool update. The source for that is DigiTimes. DigiTimes is also claiming, though, that Apple wants to move from Gorilla Glass on the iPad glass to using Sapphire Glass, which would be hugely expensive and cost prohibitive. Sapphire Glass is only used on iPads and iPhones now for the cover on the camera lens and now on the Touch ID sensor. I can't see Apple moving to that. So that puts the whole DigiTimes rumor of Touch ID fingerprint sensor home buttons in those devices in flux for me. I don't know about you, but it seems, you know, they're usually hit and miss on their rumors. So I'm taking this one with a grain of salt. I think Apple would want to get the Touch ID technology into all of their devices at some point. Whether or not it'll happen at the next event in this year, that remains to be seen. But that's everything that I have for you in the news for this week. Let's get to some feedback and comments and things like that. I want to do a couple follow-up pieces. I mentioned, I think on the last show, it might have been the show before, that I had concerns about this iOS 7 update and some of the developers moving their applications to support iOS 7 only and what would happen to older devices. We had a couple of you write in and call in and say, hey, I had a problem because I bought an app, the developer updated it to an iOS 6 only version, and I have an older device that doesn't run iOS 6, or they already updated it to an iOS 7 only version, and I have older devices that can't run iOS 7. I had to restore my device. I went to download my apps, and guess what? It downloaded the newer version. It wouldn't run on my older device. What am I going to do? Well, it turns out that Apple must have had a similar concern, because right after I told you about that concern on that show, they came out and said that they were going to allow developers to have older versions of their apps available to support older devices. So now when you connect your device, it will say, hey, do you want to pull down the older version? There's a newer version available, but your device doesn't support it. Do you want me to pull down the legacy version of the app? So that is a nice solution to that problem. The one caveat there is that Apple is letting developers decide if they want to continue to have and make those old versions available. I think most developers are going to opt to just leave those in the App Store. I don't see any reason why they would want to pull them, but I would still recommend that you archive, not just backup, but keep copies of all the old versions of your apps, all those old IPA files that you can find in your music, iTunes, iTunes Media, mobile applications folder. Go in there when you buy a new app, grab that version, or when you download an app, grab that version, and when you update, grab each version, archive that off somewhere, and keep it around so you have all those various versions just in case it ever gets pulled or taken off the App Store. It's a good backup mechanism and worth having, I think. The other thing that I talked about was how, you know, I had wanted to save some money on my cell phone plan, and a few years ago I looked into moving to Straight Talk, which is a carrier here in the States. They offer month-to-month plans. You have to buy an off-contract device, which is a much larger upfront cost, so you'd have to pay full price for an iPhone, but then you can take any AT&T GSM compatible iPhone, take it over to their network, and for $45 a month, you get unlimited data, unlimited calling, unlimited texting. They do have the 2 gigabyte data cap, and you'll be data throttled after that, but it's pretty much the same plan you'd get on AT&T, but at a lower price. And I had heard that they were a mobile virtual network operator, an MVNO, if I'm getting the acronym right, for AT&T. So it was basically just like being on AT&T's network, but at a lower cost, assuming you just have one device, because you do have to pay that $45 price for each device that you have on their network. So if you're doing a family plan, depending upon the number of phones, it may or may not work out in your favor. Well, it turns out that it's not just AT&T AT&T network that they're using. I didn't know this, but I got this comment from Aaron.
Hi, Adam. This is Aaron. Just wanted to give you some feedback for show 461. The section you were talking about where Straight Talk uses AT&T towers, in Colorado, they don't. They actually use T-Mobile. Looking to cut some costs, I decided I would switch over to Straight Talk. Bought the SIMs, you know, went through all the hoops, plugged everything in, and realized that, oh, they're using T-Mobile service. So then I looked at T-Mobile, only to find out that if you've got more than one device, it's actually cheaper to go to T-Mobile and use their service. Figured, okay, well, you know, cost cutting, let's take, you know, see what happens. So I switched over, and I'm not exactly really happy. Outside of metropolitan areas like Denver and Pueblo and Colorado Springs, which are upgrading their service for the older iPhones that use the 4G service, if you're outside of those metropolitan areas, you're usually on the edge service, which becomes, quite honestly, a royal pain when you try to use Siri or any of the other services. It just is painfully slow. So I may end up going back to AT&T, which I had been on their service for, oh gosh, probably 15-plus years. I was just looking to cut costs, but I think the cost-cutting measures is becoming more of a pain in the neck than it's worth. So just wanted to give you some of that information. Enjoy the podcast. Talk to you later.
Hey, thanks, Aaron. I'm sorry to hear that Straight Talk didn't work out for you and T-Mobile didn't work out for you. But the one thing I wanted to put out to listeners is I had no idea that in some areas they were also using T-Mobile's network, but I did go and confirm that. So you're really going to want to probably look at their coverage map and see what kinds of coverage and services they have before you leap. And I think that's a good idea for any carrier that you might be going with. And also, they've made these plans so complex. I think it's somewhat of a scheme. You know, if I'm going to throw on my conspiracy theory hat, it seems to me like they want to make it so complicated that we can't figure this out and that we wind up giving them the most possible money that we can. I have this dilemma all the time because my wife doesn't use a lot of data, and we have her on a really limited data plan, and every once in a while she goes over, and then we get the call from AT&T or the representative, oh, we think we can save you money because you keep going over your plan. But every time we actually go and do the math ourselves, for the few times that we pay the overage fee, overall, for the course of a year or a couple years, we actually come out ahead just paying the overages for those few months that we have to. So, you know, it's all a game, and you got to stay on top of that game and really play it to figure out what's going on. But good word of caution and just some good advice in terms of looking at how to get the best deal for however you use your device. And it really has to be a personal call for everyone. And luckily, I did email Aaron back because I felt horrible thinking that he moved based on my recommendation. But he was aware before he made the switch that they were T-Mobile. I hope no one else ran across that and ran into issues, because it was my full understanding. And I honestly thought it that they were using simply AT&T's network. But I guess depending upon your region, it may be a little different. So it looks like we're getting a little bit longer in this episode than I had originally wanted. I want to get to my interviews with Don McAllister from Screencast Online and George Starcher about their launch day experiences. But I also wanted to share with you just a little bit about my launch day and iPhone 5S purchase experience. In my case, I actually chose to wait overnight. You probably know if you listen to the show, I was very concerned about the amount of supply that Apple was going to have. I thought it was going to be far below the quantities they had for the iPhone 5 launch. For the iPhone 5, I actually pre-ordered mine, but I went down to do line interviews, and I got there pretty early, about 5 a.m., and the line was over 100 people at that point at my local store, and I didn't think they were going to have that many available. So my plan was to sweep by the store the night before, hoping that no one was already in line. And so I actually went around 1 p.m., on Thursday, and it turned out there was about 5 or 6 people in line already. As a matter of fact, the people in the front of the line said they had been there since the night before. Say that, oh no, here we go, I'm going to have to get in line so that I can just hold my spot. So I ended up getting in line. I waited overnight. I brought my sleeping bag and a chair, and actually was able to get a little bit of sleep. A lot of people just, you know, slept right there in front of the Apple Store, something I've never done for an iPhone launch before. But once again, I was really concerned about iPhone 5S supply. And I was able to get my phone. I wanted a 64 gigabyte slate gray, or a space gray on AT&T, and there was no shortage of those. Turned out I probably could have gotten there earlier in the morning the next day and been perfectly fine. Now, if you wanted a gold one, by the time they got to me, they only had gold Verizon 64 gigabytes available, and I'm an AT&T customer, so that didn't work out for me. But I think, as I mentioned earlier, they had 2 32 gigabyte AT&T models in gold. Those went almost immediately, and then they have the 2 64 Verizon models. That was it for my entire store, just 4 gold iPhones. They had not quite as many silver and white as the space gray option, so I think most people leaving the store that day were going home with space gray models, and that seemed to be the case across the board from a lot of the reports that I was hearing. Now, the other thing that I wanted to do was I was using my wife's iPhone upgrade, and so typically the way I do that is I do a SIM swap. And the way that works is I would buy the new phone, I'd come home and activate it with her number through iTunes, and then pop that SIM out of the iPhone 5S, the one that's activated with her number, put that in my old iPhone 5, take the one with my number out of my iPhone 5, put that into the 5S, and that constitutes the SIM swap. Well, turns out when I got into the store, the guy told me they had just been authorized and just got trained, I think like the day before, where they could do an upgrade on another phone. So they could use my wife's upgrade, but then sell me the iPhone and activate it, the iPhone 5S, and activate it with my number, leaving her phone, which was currently the 4S, all intact, and it wouldn't change anything. And I thought, well, that's going to make it a lot more convenient and easier, so let's just go ahead and do that. Not thinking about the fact that the iPhone 4S has a micro SIM and the 5 and 5S have a nano SIM. And I wanted to move her number to the iPhone 5, which was the one that I was giving up. Luckily, I had the foresight, and actually, I didn't have the foresight. Dave Hamilton from the Mac Observer had the foresight to remind me, hey, you probably want to swing by the AT&T store the day before and get a couple extra nano SIMs just in case something goes wrong with the SIM swap. That way, you don't have to go into an AT&T store and get the problem resolved, get new SIMs. You'll have them on hand. You can just call up over the phone and get the SIMs activated. So when I got back home, I was able to take my iPhone 5, restore it, you know, put it back to factory new condition, and then just simply call AT&T and say, I have a nano SIM here. I just want to move my wife's number to this nano SIM so that I can put it into this iPhone 5 and she can use it. And that all worked out fine. But it turns out it would have been easier just to do the SIM swap thing. But that was sort of my short synopsis of my launch day experience. So now I want to play for you an interview with Don McAllister, who had a quite different experience over in the UK. He didn't spend the night, and you'll see how his story turned out. And then also George, who actually was able to go the next day to a carrier store, and you'll hear how his experience went. So here's first Don McAllister and then George Starcher. So, hey Don, how you doing?
Hi, Adam. I'm doing well. It's been a long day, so it's and a traumatic day as well. But yeah, I'm bearing up under the strain.
Long day for me, too. So iPhone 5S launch day. I was out at my local Apple store, and I, you know, sharing that experience with my audience. But as I was out there this morning, I saw your message, your tweet, I believe, went out, and it looks like you were out and about too. So you didn't opt to go the pre-order and, or order, I guess it is, really, and wait route this time.
Yeah, no, not really. I mean, I was a bit disappointed you couldn't pre-order because I'm no huge fan of actually sort of lining up outside.
Queuing up, yeah.
No, not really. Queuing up, as we say over here, that's right. And so I thought, well, to be honest, my experience was coloured by the iPad mini launch because I went along to that. And I only realised today after the event today that when I went to the iPad mini launch, it was there wasn't that many people outside. So I got seen pretty quickly and had plenty of stock and it was fine. So that sort of led me down the false expectation that it might be the same for the iPhone. But then I realised that the iPad mini, you could actually order it. You could pre-order it, but I was traveling, so that's why I had to go and pick it up from the store. Right. So I just thought, oh, well, you know, I'll go down there a couple of hours before, take my time, you know, there'll be a queue, but, you know, eventually I'll get my stuff. Because I've always, whenever I've queued up at the Apple Store, I've always come away with, you know, what I've wanted. Yeah. And I sort of got up earlier than I expected, to be honest. I was up about 5:30 this morning because we had, the stores were open at 8:00. So I thought if I get there for about half 6-ish, that should do it.
So you're about an hour away.
Yeah, about 30 minutes away. Yeah, but I say I got up earlier than I expected anyway. So I just sort of I had a quick look at Twitter to see just in, on the off chance anyone had already started queuing up.
Right.
And to my horror, there was, from the photograph someone had posted 20 minutes before, there was like 100 people there already. And I thought, oh dear.
And,
that gave me a really bad feeling. I thought, this isn't going to end well.
Which store do you...
I live just outside Liverpool. So I go to there's a new Apple store. It's not that new now, but it's the Liverpool One Apple store.
Okay,
which is right in the centre of Liverpool. It's a medium size, small to medium size store, but you know, it's that's where I normally go to if I'm going to pick anything up or go to a launch. But I sort of headed out straight away. I didn't hang about. I headed down there, and by the time I got there, there must have been 150, 200 people, you know, in the queue in the line waiting to get in. I was really shocked, you know, because it's only a small store.
Right.
And, you know, I'd never seen, I think it was another phone the first time I went, and, you know, the queue was a fifth the size of the queue there. But anyway, so I sort of took my place at the back of the queue, and the Apple guys did come round and say, look, we're going to be giving tickets out soon at the front. And by the way, if you want a 5C, just let me know because we've got tons of 5Cs. And someone asked how many we could actually buy, and it was a maximum of 2 5Ss and 10 5Cs.
That's what we had, too. Eight or ten. I can't remember what they
said. Yeah, so, you know, they were quite liberal with the 5C tickets, but because everybody in the queue to a man was actually there for a 5S.
Did
I think, I think because, you know, you could actually pre-order the 5C, so I'm assuming those that really wanted a 5C would have pre-ordered anyway. But anyway,
right?
You know, everybody wanted a 5S.
When they came around and did that, did they give you guys a sense, being that far back in line, what your chances were at actually getting a ticket, or were they as usual, pretty vague about that?
They were very vague. I think they were sort of starting to butter us up, really, to sort of set our expectations, because they, you know, as usual, they didn't actually give any clue as to how much stock they had, and people were asking them direct questions, and they just blanked people, you know, about actual numbers. But they didn't sort of say at that point, you know, the first time around, that it was a definite no-no. Although I'm sure they knew at that point that, you know, how much stock they had, and it was a lost cause.
were you able to get a general buzz from the line itself? Like, do you know the people toward the front of the queue, how long they had been lined up?
Not really, because I was literally hundreds of yards away from the front of the queue.
So it didn't make it. Well, sometimes the rumor chain sort of filters down the line, and you sometimes wonder if it's like, you know, that game of telephone where the original message doesn't end up being the same at the end of the line as it is at the front.
Yeah, not really. We were that far away. It just didn't happen. I couldn't even see them giving the tickets out. I just heard that they were giving the tickets out at the front of the line. And then... probably about an hour before the store was due to open, the same guy came back and sort of said, look, we're awful sorry about this, but the demand's so high that we've only got, we've nearly given all the tickets out. We've got 20 left, but, you know, we're not even, you know, we're still at the front of the queue, basically.
Right.
So, you know, there's absolutely no way that those 20 are going to be available by the time we get down this far. Even, I think the last 20 were like 64 gig, you know, there were high-end phones that... we're always the last to go, but they just said at this point there's really no point in you hanging around. So I think people got the idea, and off we went.
Were you
5C, yeah, if you want to come in and see a 5C, if instead you're welcome to, but everyone was pretty much looking for the 5S.
Were they able to give you a sense, or did you get a sense when you were there, sort of what colors and sizes and things they even had available?
They made a point of saying the gold sort of went straight away. Mm-hmm. So the gold seems to be really, really popular. And everybody at the front of the queue was actually buying two phones. So I sort of got the impression that, you know, there was a lot of people buying things either to resell or, you know.
Right.
I got the impression that the people who were, you know, I mean, I might be wrong, but I'd got the impression.
No, you might be right.
Yeah, I sort of got the impression from what he was saying that, you know, people would just buy two gold iPhones at the beginning, you know, straight away. And it seemed as though the idea would be to go and resell them on eBay or the Black Market, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. That's common. Actually, my store was pretty much, I think, mostly people who just wanted them. But, you know, especially mine's a tiny store, so, you know, it tends to be the real diehards that are there, but some of the larger stores or even medium-sized stores, I think, you know, that's going to be a common thing, especially given all the sort of rumor build-up to how, you know, short it was going to be. But, you know, they sort of had a lot of space gray available and almost none of the white, either gold or silver. Right. Silver was even kind of constrained where I was. So I don't know if you sensed that or if you noticed that.
No, not really. They didn't really give us any sort of indication of, and, you know, we were so far away, we could actually speak to the people who had the tickets. So difficult to say, really.
So did you, so I'm assuming backup plan was use the Apple Store and app or go home and order one.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of at that point, the problem I had is that I you know, after since it's been announced, I've been in turmoil trying to work out which color I wanted.
Right.
And even up to the morning, you know, when I was queuing up, I was still undecided between, I didn't want the white one. I'm getting one for my wife as well this time around. Mm-hmm. So she'd sort of picked the silver gray one or the platinum one, as she calls it. So it was either the space gray for me or the gold, and I sort of been flipping between them. And then this morning, I decided, right, it's the gold.
Would they let you in so you could actually see them to kind of get a sense of what the actual color was?
Yeah, if I'd have hung around, but, you know, it was an hour before it was opening, and then they were going to have to process all the people in front. So I didn't think there was any point sort of sticking around for that.
Walk up to the display or something?
No, we couldn't get near it. So my plan was to sort of not order one when I came home, and in fact, go back to the Apple Store when it quieted down and actually see them and, you know, see what they're like in the flesh, etc.
Yep.
And then I started to see tweets coming in of people, you know, the actual length of time being pushed back and pushed back. So I said, oh, hang it, I'll just go ahead and order two online. So I did that.
Yeah, I have a slight sense that, you know, Apple gets orders throughout the day. It wouldn't surprise me, you know, if some orders, at least in the US, I know, you know, if orders come in late in the afternoon, like the UPS, the late delivery, if they have, you know, end up getting some extras. So I think it might behoove people who, if you don't want to wait the online time, I have a feeling it might behoove you to, you know, just pop into your Apple Store if you can, you know, later in the afternoon, and then maybe do similar things like next week. I don't think they get too many shipments Monday from what I've heard, but any other day they should be getting probably regular shipments, I would imagine. Probably not a lot, but
yeah, this is the problem. I really didn't want the hassle of going back down again.
Yeah.
You got to be
really wanting it to
yeah, the thing that really wound me up, though, was an hour or so later, I was sort of on Twitter and I saw someone posted another photo from the Apple Store in Liverpool saying, not many people queuing up for the new iPhone.
Just give me a sense. So is that number for that store? You've been at least once before, it sounds like, for the Mini, which may not be a good judge, but does that seem like a pretty high number for people queuing up at an Apple store in your area?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was far in excess of what I'd seen there before. Far in excess. Had I have realized that the queue was going to be that big, I probably just would have waited and ordered online, to be honest.
Yeah.
So it was a complete shock to see that many people there. You know, I think the 5S is a great machine, but I wasn't sure whether or not it would appeal to a wide audience, you know, with it being the top end, and having whether or not people would actually pick on picked up on the fact that, you know, it's got the 64-bit processor and the fingerprint stuff. But, you know, it's from the numbers that were outside the store, it certainly has. And I don't know if there were people who had been waiting for, you know, they were on an older phone and had been waiting and waiting for the new phone to come out, or whether or not they just wanted to go ahead and get it. But interesting.
I don't know your opinion on this, but I sort of feel that with the 5C, I think it's kind of a sleeping giant. I think that's the phone that people are going to wander into the Apple store or wander into their carrier store and looking at that versus an Android and being able to like see it in person and sort of, I think they're going to make an impulse decision at that point when they see how beautiful those colors are and the build quality of that phone. I think it's going to be one of those things where we don't see a lot of pre-orders, a lot of hype around it, because it's not the diehards like us, you know, who want the latest and greatest. But you're going to have all those people that just are the browsers, the people, I'm going to go in the Apple store and just see what they have. And then they fall in love.
Don't know that it's, you know, they don't know that it's based on the iPhone 5 from 12 months ago. They will see it as a new phone, a new iPhone, and they can buy, you know, they can get a new iPhone at a relatively cheap price on their contract. Yeah. I think as well that although the photos look really nice, I have an inkling that they probably, because I still haven't seen one in the flesh or picked one up, I have an inkling that, you know, they're going to look better in real life, and they will better in real life.
They do.
I've seen lots of tweets today from people. Well, you had a go today with a couple.
Yeah,
of
I walked over and I definitely picked them up and wanted to touch and feel and see. And I mean, the colored buttons, you know, just blend into the case. It's a really beautiful, and you pick it up and it is just, it's solid. I mean, it does not feel like plastic at all. And any other phone. I think of like the plastic, I think a lot of people are going to want to compare it to like the 3GS or the 3G. And it's not even in the same league. No. It feels like an iPhone 5 in terms of weight and heft and just the, you know, how solid it is.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a misnomer calling it a plastic phone, because it's actually covered. It's still a metal phone, but it's covered in plastic, isn't it? So it's got a different feel to it. It doesn't give, and it's more like a ceramic or a enamel type finish.
I mean, I've picked up some of those other Android phones, and I'm not, you know, I think there's some great Android phones on the market and stuff like that. As a matter of fact, I was in the AT&T store earlier that same day, and I went and just, you know, grabbed a couple of the more recent models. Mm-hmm. But they still have that sort of real light, cheap plastic feel. You know, you pick them up and you're like, there's nothing here. And you pick up the iPhone 5C and you're like, oh, yeah, this is it. But it's not heavy. You know, it's just solid is the way to describe it.
It's dense, isn't it? I think that's the...
Yeah, that's a great way to describe it. So you don't feel like you're getting something cheap. And just the color and the lacquer. And I think the attention to detail, you go and look at the seams on those buttons and you can't even hardly tell. It's like it's almost molded together, but they're separate, you know, they're still separate pieces. And so that's the kind of thing that I think it's an emotional response that you get. And that's why I'm thinking it's going to be this really slow starter. I think people are going to be browsing, you know, shopping for other things in the holidays. Let's pop in the Apple store, and they're just going to fall in love with the 5C.
And I think iOS 7 as well is going to, you know, because that's sort of coordinated with the case, isn't it?
So, yeah.
And the bright colors on the face match the colors of the back. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure, pretty confident that they, I mean, Apple know what they're doing.
Wall Street's going to be a bit surprised when Apple posts their quarterly numbers after the holiday quarter. So,
well, especially if we get this next event next month as well. That should be interesting.
Well, cool. I'm sorry it didn't work out for you, but I appreciate you sharing your experience with us.
No, it taught me a lesson. So I'll plan a bit more carefully next time. And
I just hope they bring back pre-orders, because I really don't like you know, sleeping out in front of the Apple store. As fun as it is, I mean, and I'm assuming you had the same experience. The people in line are wonderful. The Apple store people are wonderful. It's great camaraderie. You know, they were at my place. They had people. One group of people backed up their truck and had a TV in there, and they had their Apple TV going, and they were watching movies. And you know, and the Apple store employees brought out coffee in the morning for everybody and water. And you know, they always do a really nice job of making sure everyone's, you know, having a good time and well taken care of. So it's even if it doesn't work out, you still get that sort of experience of hanging out with like-minded people, which is always just fun. But you know, I've done that enough times where I'm perfectly fine to stay at home and wait for the delivery guy.
Same here.
But for those who haven't had the experience, I think it can be a good one. So cool. Well, so what are you up to? What's going on these days? What's new over at Screencasts Online?
Oh, it's still plodding along. We've got still doing the well. It's, I don't know if last time I spoke to you was sort of one to one. I know we've been on a couple of podcasts together, but it's moved now from just a Mac show to Mac and iOS. So I do two tutorials each week now, one Mac, one iOS one. And I also have a magazine now as well as the Screencast.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, magazine, it's a great magazine.
In the newsstand. Yeah, that's good. And it's not just my videos and tutorials. I've got people sort of submitting articles and stuff. We've got a great bunch of people over there that contribute to the magazine as well. So, and that's going really well. And the membership has changed slightly. So we now do a free trial. You can get a 14-day free trial if you want to join up as a member and try it out. So it's no cost to you.
That's awesome. People should. If you haven't checked out Don's stuff, check out the podcast. And you still doing the apps too?
Yeah, we've got we still have apps in both the Mac App Store and the iTunes App Store. I tend to do, if I've got long topics sort of that span 2 or 3 hours, I'll do separate apps for those. We have got a new app coming out soon. It's still in development, but rather than individual apps for each subject, we're going to have a single Screencast Online app, and there'll be in-app purchases for the various tutorials. So that hopefully will be out around about the same time as Mavericks, and we'll try and get a Mavericks tutorial there as well.
Yeah, if you want to get up to speed on your stuff or learn something new, the screencasts are top-notch, so people should check those out.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Don.
Okay, well, I'll go and have an early night now, I think. And,
yeah, good night. Have a little nightcap. And
That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
Good. All right, cheers, Adam.
Bye.
Bye now.
Hey, George, what's up?
Yeah, well, I just got back from a lunch appointment, and right before the lunch appointment, since I had a few minutes to kill, I thought I'd just roll the dice because I was on the fence about whether I should get a 5S or not. I wanted one, but frankly, even in just the 2 days I had iOS 7 on my 4S, the experience I had was good enough that if I didn't come across a 5S, I wouldn't have worried about it too much, at least for right now.
Yeah.
But I figured, why not? I got a little time to kill. I kind of want it. Turns out that the tax refund check from the state I work in had not, I still don't have it. And because my residence is out of that state, they like have to mail it. And they're like, well, we mailed it, but we show it's not cash. So we got to send you a new one. And I'm like, well, that would just offset the price of the phone. So if I find one, great. So on a whim, just to kill time before my appointment, I went to the AT&T store because that was on the way to Best Buy. The closest Apple store is, a good hour drive, 30, 40 minute one-way drive. So I didn't have time for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured I'd just go in and just try. What the heck, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And I walk into AT&T store. Parking lot was not completely full. There was not like an established line, but they did have a queuing system where they're running around with iPads and they're like signing you in.
Checking people in. Yeah, that's how they do it there.
And they had the monitor up on the wall. So you could tell it was only like 10 or 12 people on the wait list. And it could have been any issue, not just buying phones, right?
Sure, yeah.
And that was support issues and stuff like that as well. And so a guy walks up to me and he's like, yeah, what do you want? And I said, I told him, I said, what happened? I just kind of laughed, right? I didn't expect him to have any because everything I was seeing on Twitter was like, oh, this AT&T store only got 3 phones.
Right.
And, so I'm like, I figured no chance, right? So I said, yeah, I'm looking for the iPhone 5S. I said, you probably don't have any. He goes, well, we didn't get any. They didn't even come in of the white and the gold.
Right. That's right. What I had heard, too. I had stopped into my AT&T store just to get some extra SIMs because I thought I was going to have to do a SIM swap, and I wanted to have extra ones in case anything went wrong, and I didn't want to have to run to the AT&T store today.
Yeah.
Actually, advice from Dave Hamilton, which I thought was good advice. So I stopped in, and I kind of joked with them to see. She's like, I had mentioned I was going to the Apple store to wait in line. She's like, well, we're going to have them here. And I said, well, are you going to have, do you know how many? And she's like, oh yeah, we got 10 boxes in the back. And then she laughed. And I said, yeah, right. And I said, so what do you have? And she said, I think we got 2 boxes in. And then she also commented exactly like you said. She said, but we don't have any white, no white and silver. And no. So she let that bit of information out, which I thought was surprising the day before.
Yeah
I was even a little bit surprised that they had them the day before, because I half joked with her too. I said, oh yeah, but you're not going to get them till tomorrow morning, so there's no way you know how many boxes you have. She said, no, actually we got 2 in. And I was trying to calculate with it might have been Jeff Gamet, and I think our estimates were that the boxes were 4x4x4, you know, the cases that they come in. Mm-hmm. So that would amount to like 64 phones, maybe.
Yeah.
And I would assume that each box was only one size. So I was guessing they had 16s and 32s of the Space Gray.
Yeah.
And because she even commented, I said, well, I want a 64. She's like, oh, 64s are kind of rare around here. Well, but it sounds like that wasn't what you found.
Yeah. So I asked the guy and he said, well, we don't have any of the, you know, the white, silver or the gold. He goes, but we do have the gray. And I said, well, that's fine because that's actually what I wanted. And he goes, well, what size do you want? And he kind of looked at me and I said, well, and he goes, we're completely out of 16s. Those apparently just flew out. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, actually, I wanted a 32. He goes, well, we got 32s and 64s. And I said, well, 32 is what I want. So I said, well, oh, crap, you know, because I was kind of expecting to actually get off the hook and get turned down and actually be thrilled about it, right? And I'm like, well, I guess just put my name on the list.
Yeah. Did he give you a sense of how many total phones that they had? Did you get any?
No. But I had the feel at least this particular AT&T store had at least a reasonable amount because it didn't seem like anyone that was in line or waiting. I didn't overhear them saying, and they had plenty of the C, the 5Cs.
Yeah, the 5Cs are.
Because there were a couple like girls in there that like wanted pink ones and they're like, cool. Oh, you won't have a problem. You can have whatever you want.
Yeah.
And so that wasn't the problem. It was just the 5S and only in the slate and no 16s left by the time I got there. And I didn't even stroll until 10.
I was going to say, what time did you roll in there? And did they open at 8 or earlier than that? Do you know?
I do not know.
Yeah.
I was busy.
Typically 8. Most places I think were opening at 8.
So. Yeah, I was doing work stuff before I had to, you know, I took a break. And
so
then
2 hours later, they had, could you, you know, you said, I mean, there were 10 people, obviously, or 12 people on the wait list, but you don't know
at the time. At the time I walked in, yeah.
Yeah, but you don't know what they were in there for. Did it look like a lot of people were there
almost,
for iPhones?
It seemed to me almost every one of them was an iPhone, except for at least one person where I know it wasn't, because I overheard and the lady's like, I can't get this thing to stop beeping, you know. And so it was some sort of usability issue with her particular phone. But every other person that I saw in front of me, you know, walk straight to somebody that pulled out an iPhone out of a cabinet and, you know, they started setting them up.
Well, that's cool. So that, I mean, that shows hope for some people who might be out there.
Yeah. And they were using iPads to do all this and that seemed to make things flow real well. And then in my case, so I asked her a couple questions before she started. I said, is this going to mess up my grandfathered unlimited? And she, not a problem. And I said, I said, do I have to activate it here? Or can I go home and do it through iTunes? And she goes, I don't think you can do it through iTunes now. I mean, you do it through Wi-Fi stuff. I said, but she goes, and I think it was a terminology thing. I just meant go home and activate it. That's probably what I should have said. And she agreed that could be done. She goes, but since you're moving from a 4S to a 5 model-ish, that difference in SIM cards might be a problem.
Right.
So she really wanted to activate it right then and there. And then I could just, you know, do whatever I had to do when I got home. So I got it up and running. I logged into my, you know, my iCloud and all that stuff. So I at least got my contacts on there and all that. And got the phone and got my iMessages flowing in and stuff so that I could at least use the phone while I had my appointment, right?
I think I just realized the error of something I did now, because I forgot. Is the 4S have a micro SIM, not a nano SIM?
I don't know. I didn't take it out.
I don't remember.
Yeah, she just did some stuff in her iPad and transferred my number to the new IMI and the new phone.
Yeah, because I'm doing the SIM swap. And, you know, I'm alternating upgrades with my wife. So this is actually my wife's upgrade. But when I got into the store, the guy was like, oh, well, we can just activate this as you with your number, but use her upgrade, which was a whole new policy, I guess, that they have. Mm-hmm. So I had him go ahead and do that. But I still have to roll my wife's 4S SIM into my iPhone 5. And if that doesn't work,
You'll probably have to go in and I'll probably have to.
No, I won't, because I have two blank SIMs that I got
the day before, so I can take one of those, well, call them up, give them the number.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you might be able to just call them on the phone and have them.
That was the whole point of doing them. So I think I just saved myself.
Yeah,
but I should have had him. I mean, it would have been easier. Now, in hindsight, now it would have been easier to have him do what I was originally going to do, which is activate the 5S with her number.
Yeah.
Then that would have, you know, all of her data on it. Then it would just be swapping that SIM for the one in the 5, and vice versa, and then I'd be done.
Yep. Yeah,
so I actually complicated it more.
But because I was going from a 4S to a 5, she's like, I really want to do it here, so I know the phone works. I'm like, okay, fine. And but what I found was, you know, because I just haven't done it in a long time, and I, you know, I didn't know if anything changed in iOS 7. So, you know, I got it working, and then I went to my appointment, and then I went home.
Did you use iCloud backup? Or do you use iCloud backup?
That's where I'm going. Where I'm going. So while I was out, while I was waiting on my appointment, I at least, you know, got into iMessages and got, you know, that stuff set up and listened to a few things off my iTunes Match and blah, blah, blah. But then I get home because I really, really didn't want to go through all the trouble of moving my ringtones, and because I had some custom ringtones and I didn't want to go through the trouble of just removing in all of my apps and all that stuff manually. I'm like, I'll just, you know, restore from backup. And that's when I realized, oh, there's no restore from backup once the phone's up and running. So what you have to do is you basically have to wipe the phone, and then you come back to the, as if it just come out of the box screen. And then you say, I'm ready to activate this phone. And yes, restore from iCloud backup. So anything I did, including a few text messages I had gotten during that time frame or stuff, you know, in call records and stuff, did not, you know, basically got wiped out. Not that it was a big deal, but it's just something to be aware of that, you know, basically the phone was temporary in a way. And so right now it's downstairs restoring from backup and putting all my apps back and putting all my data back. And I'm sure I'll have to re-enter passwords and stuff. But I did, you know, in essence, have to come home and literally wipe the phone, even though I'd already played with setting up fingerprints. So I had to set them all up again and, you know, all that stuff while I, you know, once I kicked off the restore from iCloud backup.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So if you're a person like me and you're going from a 4S to a 5S, you generally, it's just safer to let them activate it in the store. Don't really do a whole lot of setup. Just go home and then hit wipe. And, you know, all phone and content, and then just reset it up and type in all your passwords and then say restore from iCloud backup, because that's really the only point that you get that prompt. You don't, you can't go into settings and go find reset this phone from iCloud backup from the phone once it's already up and running.
Right.
So that's pretty much what I had to do, but it's snappy, and it was at half power when he pulled it out of the box and gave it to me. And I had pretty much ran it down, and it mostly probably because I was playing with it, and I was playing with it on LTE and all that, waiting on my appointment. That, you know, when I, by the time I got home, you know, I guess I'd probably at that point had the phone up for, I want to say, 3 hours. I pretty much had depleted what was left of the battery charge.
Yeah.
And, and had to plug it, leave it, and of course it's downstairs plugged in and doing a restore anyway, so.
You know, there's that, there's that classic debate about that stuff, right? Which is, what's the best thing to do battery-wise?
Yeah, do you charge it up and then let it deplete once to train it, or, you know, all that stuff?
Yeah, I don't think you have to do that kind of stuff anymore. I think you can just...
All I know is it wasn't at full charge when it came out of the box.
Yeah, I mean, and that's... it's funny, when I was in line, they actually mentioned that. Somebody asked about that. You know, they said it just depends on where it was at in the production cycle in the factory and how much they charged it and... you know, that sort of stuff. So usually they try and have them about half to 75% charge, I think, is where they leave them. Because I know it's recommended if you're going to be storing a device that you should have it about half to 75% battery. You don't want it 100% full, and you don't want it 100% depleted.
Gotcha.
That's at least Apple's recommendation. So if you know you're not going to be using your phone or something like that for a while, that's how you're supposed to store them. Because excessive battery drain can really just mess up the battery, and excessive overcharging can sort of mess up the battery.
And talking about that, so my 4S had a problem until iOS 7 where it was kind of draining faster ever since I had the screen replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that they were directly related. It just seemed that way. But then once I got iOS 7 and then I did some of that, you know, turn off location services on a few apps that really didn't need, I mean, really, why does Angry Birds need to know where I'm at? You know, I mean, what the heck? So I turned some of that stuff off. I turned off background sync on some apps, not all. I turned off the whole local iAds and local recommendation stuff in the in those, and some of the app background sync. I was selective about killing a few of those so that those didn't happen. And once I did that and went through a full battery charge cycle, it actually seems like it's been, the 4S was holding battery way better than it had been for a month. Even though I hear about people going, oh, it's just draining my battery dry. And I'm like, yeah, it kind of didn't for me. So I don't know if it's just because I took the time to really look at each setting and you know, because I mean, there's a couple of blog posts like it, too, on a few other places about the, you know, fix your battery problem. And
it's doing a lot more.
Yeah, I went down that list and I just tweaked it for me. Right. I mean, I followed their general guidelines, but I tweaked it for me. And I'm like, you know, Angry Birds just does not need location. Just doesn't, you know, kill it. Not that I leave it open, but just on the off chance I opened the app and forgot and left it in the background. I wanted to be sure it wasn't going to be sucking battery because I, you know, didn't remember 2 weeks from now that it was going to do it.
Yeah.
And pretty much it's been stable. You know, my battery usage was stable after that.
Yeah. I'm noticing a little more battery drain, but again, I think it's my settings. The other thing is I have been doing the last few cycles just a straight, you know, upgrade. I haven't really done an erase and restore kind of thing. So, you know, that's my last ditch effort, but I'm going to play around with some of those settings because I think I'm in the same situation where there's just a lot of background stuff that I don't need.
Yeah. You know, so now the hurdle I'm facing is this is now a Thunderbolt device. So all my accessories, all my, you know, cables, you know, all of that, basically, you know, I'm going to have to start, a case even to fit the thing because I was a 4S guy. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a 5 case that might fit the 5S. You know, I got to reconsider all of that now and deal with that aspect. And then, of course, this is always a rough time of year for me because it's wife's birthday, then anniversary, then Christmas. Just boom, 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 boom. And she's already said she wants the 5S as her birthday anniversary type thing. So I'll be turning around and buying yet another one. But that's on her. She's a Sprint person. So and I'm an AT&T. So I can't really do it for her. All I can do is hand her the cash.
Right.
But and then she'll have to change all her accessories and cables and stuff. And it's just the idea of having to go up. Buy several of those Thunderbolt cables is kind of like making me flinch a little.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's good deals. I bought the Amazon's ones recently and I'm very happy with the quality of them. And also Monoprice has good deals. So
how much was the one you got from Amazon?
14, I think, with
per cable.
Yeah.
Those standard old 6 foot type cable.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, cool. I may have to grab one or two of those then.
Yeah. On Amazon Prime. So I didn't pay shipping. So good deal.
Because I use Siri and Maps a lot because I have a 3-hour commute to a place that I work and then I come back and stuff like that. And so I'm very much a Siri messages and, you know, take me home kind of maps and all that. So basically my phone is my nav computer for my car. It's my brain. You know, it's got my podcasts and my books too, but it's also the, you know, just take me back. Not that I don't know the trip, but it's nice to have, you know, look, you know, you get texted and how far away are you? You just glance down and go, tell my wife, you know, 96 minutes. And then you never have to hardly take your feet, you know, hands off the wheel, except just enough to trigger Siri, you know, and it's a good thing. And so that home button feels way better. The fingerprint thing working pretty good. I did my index finger and my two thumbs because the way I find when I thought about it that I tend to hold the phone and unlock it because I'm a, you know, always keep everything locked all the time guy. Mm-hmm. That those are the fingers I would use in any of those orientations. So I did those three, but I also found too that, you know, it's, I've seen a lot of videos where it's like they just barely touch it and it just flies open. And it's not quite that fast for me. Mm-hmm. It takes a second, but it's still way faster than entering my code.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm liking that.
Last thing, finish up here, but on the security thing. So you do to use the fingerprint scanner obviously requires a passcode lock.
Yeah, right? I use my existing passcode lock that I always use. Yes.
So are you using just the quick code, or because something that I'm thinking about doing, since it's now going to be more convenient? I agree with you.
I was using a
stronger passcode lock because, you know, then it's going to be stronger and I don't have to enter it that frequently.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. For the purposes of getting everything up and running, because I've only had it a few hours,
right.
I just use the same code I always used.
Right.
Because I mean, it would basically take someone punching me and knocking me out for me not to realize where my phone is,
right.
Because I just never let it get that far away. So having a short code really wasn't a big deal. And then I knew that I could go to any other device and wipe it before they could really do much with it if that were the case. So, yes, I admittedly was a short code user. But just like the point you made, and I had not thought about it yet because I just simply hadn't gotten that far. But that's a great idea. Is I will go ahead as soon as the restore finishes,
right.
And I will go convert it to a long code, because then I only have to worry about entering the long code after a reboot, or if it's been, you know, locked for a much longer period of time than I ever usually leave it alone.
Yeah, exactly.
So I almost never will have to enter it. So I agree. I think I'll do that. That's a great idea.
Because then it's suddenly more secure. I mean, I had never wanted to use one before because I just didn't want the inconvenience. But now it's like, oh, okay. Because it was already a hassle enough to enter the 4-digit code. But I wanted that, at least that level of security. So I think you know, that's going to be one of my favorite benefits of the fingerprint scanner, is just that I can use a more secure mechanism for locking the device.
Oh, the other thing I did, I didn't research it thoroughly, but I've heard in the past, you know, the people that like, oh, I handed my phone off to my, you know, kid or my mom or whatever, and they were getting my iMessages. I made sure right before I watched her activate the new phone with my number,
mm-hmm.
While she was still like typing in the info and adding on my Apple Care Plus and stuff, while she was doing that, I specifically jumped into my old 4S and disabled and, you know, turned off iMessage. So that it would deregister the phone, hopefully, so that when I recycle my phone for friends mm-hmm. or family or whoever, you know, wherever I end up doing with it, that assuming I just don't keep it as a backup, then I won't have to worry about, you know, that problem.
Right.
So I just made sure right before it transitioned, I went deregister, you know, slid that little slider to kill it, and hopefully I won't have that problem.
Yeah, that's good. That's actually good advice. No,
it's a simple, quick one. You know,
I usually just go back through though and do a factory restore. Would that not have the same effect?
Well, must not, because people have that problem, right?
Yeah.
So I think the trick was turning off iMessage with the slider before the phone number and IMI and all that linkage was broken, so that it would tell the iMessage system, don't send messages here anymore cleanly. So for the one, you know, the couple seconds that it took just to slide that slider and then let her, you know, move my number over, I think probably that was going to turn out to be worth the headache, because I don't have to worry about it later. Right. Yeah. So I definitely, if you're transitioning from one phone to the other, I would make sure that before you actually initiate that linkage change, that you flip off iMessage and then do it.
Yeah, good advice. Well, cool. Sounds like you know, you had a great route. I I spent a lot more time in line than you did, and pretty much ended up with the same results. So,
oh yeah, Lord, cool. I had my iPhone, I would say 20 minutes.
Yeah,
from the time I walked in the door, I was shocked, right?
Yeah.
And so it was like, wow, that went surprisingly well.
I wanted to be sure there was no question.
the truth is this. I've always loved the 4S. I thought it was a great phone. Sure, there was a little bit of shortcoming with the camera, but the camera's still really good in good light. And as long as the battery isn't completely cheesed, and I know you've talked about that before, that there are places you can go or even just get the parts yourself and
yep.
all that, where you can get that battery refreshed without trashing the phone. And with iOS 7 on it, the past few days, I literally, my feelings would not have been hurt had I walked in and all the stuff I was hearing about, oh, you know, there's none here and all that. If they said that, I would have just gone, eh, okay, great. So I didn't spend money today. And I would have been just perfectly happy, because the 4S with iOS 7 on it, and I'd turned off the parallax, you know, motion thing and the accessibility and, you know, those few things to make sure I wasn't using the animated paper, you know, just the tweaks to make sure I didn't really cheese my battery just by putting on default 7. My experience was good, and I could have been happy going another several months with the 4S with iOS 7 and not thought anything of it.
Cool. Very cool. Well, thanks, George, for sharing your experience with us.
Well, thanks for having me. Yeah, as always.
As always, if people want to, you know, see what you're up to, follow along, follow you, where should they go?
Just George Starcher anything. So Google Plus, Twitter, george@georgestarcher.com is the email. And of course, georgestarcher.com is my site, although frankly, I've got a lot going on. So if I post anything, it's usually like Twitter, then maybe, you know, app.net, but pretty much usually Twitter is cool. The place to find my most, where I'm actually active.
So follow George on Twitter and look for him on future episodes of MacCast. Thanks, George.
Thanks.
So there you go, George Starcher and Don McAllister from Screencasts Online, sort of their experience. If you'd like to share your experience with me, as I mentioned earlier, go ahead and shoot me an email, send me an audio comment. I'd love to hear your stories as well. Now I want to talk a little bit about my experience with the actual iPhone, the iPhone 5S. I've had it now for a couple days, been able to play around with it a little bit, play around with some of the new features, and I have to say I love them. All the new stuff that's in there makes getting this new phone really worth it to me. Touch ID was just as easy to set up and use as we all had probably hoped it would be. I absolutely love using it when I can remember. I have this new tendency to forget that I have even Touch ID. You see the whole swipe to unlock, and you slide and then realize, oh, I can use my fingerprint. Luckily, I've discovered that even if you're on the passcode screen, you can actually use the Touch ID and still get in. So I've done that a couple times too, where I've started to enter the passcode, maybe got the first number in there and went, oh, no, I just have to hold my finger down on the button. But setting up is super simple. You just touch your finger multiple times, and then you sort of move it around a little bit so the sensor gets different orientations and different angles on your fingerprint, and you're good to go. One little tip I found out about after reading online, as you've probably heard, you can store up to 5 fingerprints in there. So when you go into the settings and you add additional fingerprints, it has sort of like 5 slots, one for what most of us assume to be 5 fingers. Well, it turns out there is a way, or a kind of hack, I don't know if it's a hack or a workaround, or if this is something Apple intended or didn't intend, but you can put multiple fingers into a single slot. So if you go in, and I saw this article over on iMore, and they had a little video on there that somebody had sent in to them. But what he discovered was that if you go in and you start the process of setting up your fingerprint in a single slot, rather than tapping the same finger every time to the sensor as it sort of fills in the little red lines to let you know your progress of how much it's scanned, if you just alternate your fingers, so say you start with your thumb and then you do your index finger and your middle finger and your ring finger and your pinky, and just keep repeating that pattern on that single slot, it will actually register in that one slot all 5 of those fingers. And then at that point, once it's entered in, you can use any one of those fingers to unlock your device. So don't know if that's intentional, don't know if that impacts or affects the accuracy, but it seemed to work pretty well in that demo. So I thought that was a cool little hack around if you want to be able to have one slot recognize more than one of your fingers. There's also been some information that you don't just have to use your finger, that you can use other body parts, including somebody tried nipples. People are weird on the internet. What can I say? But somebody also had their cat use its paw on the Touch ID. You can use other things. Again, I'm assuming that's just is accurate. I don't know about the uniqueness of nipples, but hey, there you go. I guess we're getting a little risque in this episode of the MacCast now. The camera, that was the thing that I was most excited about, the camera. And I wasn't that jazzed about the slow motion video. And then I started using it. And wow, that feature is fun to play with. And it is cool. It is really, really cool. It's neat to see. It is a whole separate mode in the video camera. So you slide over and you have sort of a slow motion 120 frame per second capture mode. And that's significant because I found after using it, Apple actually captures and records 120 frame per second video on the iPhone when you set up where you want to see standard 30 frame per second motion and 120. You kind of have input output points, and it's sort of like just in that mode where you would normally trim your clip. Under that, you have little sliders, and you can move them back and forth, and you kind of set the area of slow-mo you want to see in the video. The thing is that it does that on the fly. It dynamically, as it's playing back, shows you the different frame rates and switches between the two, but it doesn't embed that in the video. It's non-destructive, and that sounds cool at first until you realize when you want to export it, there are no export options. So after recording some video, when I brought it into iPhoto, connected up the iPhone, brought it into iPhoto, and then played it back on my Mac, it played back full frame. There was no slow-mo in there because it hadn't rendered in, it hadn't put into the video the actual effect. Now, when I brought the video clip back onto my iPhone and brought it up in the Photos app, once again, it saw, oh, this is 120 frame per second video. I can give you the slow motion controls. So I could set those controls again. And so if you want to get this stuff, say, into iMovie on your iPhone and have the slow-mo in place, you can't do that directly from the camera roll. You have to do some finagling. You have to do some tweaking to get it work. Now, get it to work. Now, one trick is to use the sharing options and export it to email, say send it to yourself as an email. The problem there is you lose the full HD resolution. Instead of coming across at 720 by 1280, it becomes 320 by 568. So you lose resolution. You can iMessage it to another iPhone and that will work. I'm not sure what the resolution comes across as there. I'm assuming it would again be the lower resolution. I didn't have a phone to test this with. The problem is if you send it to yourself on your own iPhone 5S, you get, once again, the raw 120 frame per second video on the iPhone 5S, and you can't really do anything with it. You can import it into iMovie on the desktop after exporting it, but again, it brings in the raw 120 frame per second video. As a matter of fact, it gets a little badge in iMovie on the Mac that says 120, and then from within iMovie, you could use iMovie's built-in slow motion mode to slow the frame rate down and get your slow motion effect, but you basically have to rebuild it in there. The only option that I found that was really acceptable to me to export the video as you've sort of set it up on the iPhone itself in the camera roll, it was to send it to iCloud, to use your photo stream and your iCloud sharing, make the video public, and then go in your web browser on the Mac. And again, you can't do this on the iPhone, unfortunately, because it doesn't give you the download options. But on the Mac, you can download the video, and then it will pull down the full 720 by 1280 video at 30 frames per second with the rendered slow motion portion in it. So the way you do that is you open up the Photos app after you've recorded your video, you go to the shared tab, you select the video, and you then click on the People tab and then turn on the public website option and then tap the Share Link button, and that will allow you to email the link to yourself. So email the link to yourself to that page, then go on your Mac, open up that email, click on the link, then click on the video to start to go to the playback screen. And then on that screen, you should see a download link up at the top. When you click on that, you'll get the full resolution rendered video. And then once that's downloaded, you can go back. If you don't want to have that video publicly shared through the photo stream, you can turn off the public sharing from photos on your device, and then you should now have that full rendered video. So a little bit tricky. I hope Apple fixes this and gives us some sort of export option for the slow motion video, but otherwise really cool video. There's some great examples showing up online. If you just search YouTube for iPhone 5S slow motion, you should find some really, really cool clips. And maybe at some point I'll try and post some of my own for you to take a look at. The video zoom feature is actually really good in the standard video mode. In slow motion mode, it is really low quality. So I don't know if that means they're adjusting the resolution down a little bit to get the faster frame rate. But when I tried zooming with the slow motion video, I was very unhappy with the results. So that's one downside there. And then the True Tone flash was another thing I was curious to try out. I'm not a huge fan of flash photos in general. I think they all look like they have the flash applied, and it held true for the True Tone flash as well. It still looks to me like a flash photo. Yes, maybe the color balance is a little bit better, but I think I'm going to continue to mostly take my photos without the flash. And I did a couple low light tests, and it certainly does a better job than the 5 in low light. The 5 did an okay job, but the 5S looks a lot better. You can still tell there's a little bit of graininess in there, a little bit of the artifacting, but it's much reduced, I think, on the iPhone 5S. And the overall quality of the photos, I've been blown away by the quality of just the standard shots that I can get with the iPhone 5S. The iPhone 5 was really good. The 4S was good. The iPhone 5S is phenomenal. So if you're really into photos with your mobile devices, I think you would be very happy with the quality on the iPhone 5S. Let's talk a little bit about that new processor in speed. I felt almost immediately after setting up my iPhone 5S that swiping, scrolling, launching applications, it all felt faster to me. But I did wonder, hey, is this a little bit of new iPhone syndrome? Am I just perceiving this as being faster because I've been told it's faster? And I did some tests against my iPhone 5 running the same applications, launching the same applications, swiping back and forth through the different screens, pulling down the spotlight surge, flicking up the control center on both devices at the same time. Guess what? They were dead exactly the same for most operations. About the only place I noticed a speed difference was I went into iPhoto, and for some of the image processing on more complex effects, it was certainly faster on the iPhone 5S, probably almost twice as fast in some cases, depending upon, again, the complexity of what I was doing. So I have a feeling if you're doing a lot of video exporting, audio processing, image editing, things like that, that's where you're going to notice the speed difference, especially on optimized apps. And Apple had optimized all of their apps, so I knew iPhoto would have been optimized for the 64-bit, and I think it showed. Speed tests and benchmarking are certainly showing the speed advantage for the iPhone 5S. Early benchmarks are coming out, and it just shows blazing speed. Apple's iPhone is smoking the competition in terms of processor. And then the one thing that I think is, from a perception standpoint, making the phone feel slower is some of the new iOS 7 animations. Somebody commented on this on Twitter, and it certainly is true. Apple has slowed down. Like, when you unlock the phone and everything comes zooming in, that animation is really slow overall. And I think that gives the perception that the phone is a bit slower. Same thing when you're sort of launching applications or going into folders. Apple's made those animations slow. And I don't know if it's on purpose or deliberate so that you can see the effect, but it'd be nice if they sped those up a little bit, because I don't think we need to wait to see those every single time. It's kind of cool the first time, but maybe after that, how about letting the frame rate go a little bit faster and making that a little bit better? Something that's more iOS related, but you know, it did kind of come with a new phone, iTunes Radio. Absolutely am hooked and love iTunes Radio. If you haven't tried it, I recommend you just checking it out. It definitely has that Pandora feel. So if you enjoy Pandora in terms of the stations and things like that, I think you're going to like iTunes Radio. It does get, or can get a little bit repetitive depending upon how you set up your stations. I found if you add more artists to a certain station, so like I created an 80s station and I keep adding new artists, that's going to get you more variety. I really like the fact that you can tweak your stations in terms of whether you want to hear more hits on that station, whether you want to have it kind of be a variety, or if you want to go into full discovery mode where it's going to try and find more obscure artists. I've noticed with some of my radio stations, if I set that slider down to discovery, you get a lot more B-sides and kind of unheard songs from a lot of your favorite artists. And I'm really enjoying that feature of it. But I think it works really well. I've had very few issues with sort of skipping and things like that. And it might be, I might like it a little bit more than Pandora because for me it's ad-free. I have an iTunes Match subscription. So this is just another area where that $25 a year is paying off even more. So I haven't really used Spotify. I know a lot of people really like that, so I can't speak to how that compares, but absolutely love it. And Apple has reported that they have 11 million people already using iTunes Radio. So I think nothing but a big success. But overall, I'm very happy with the iPhone 5S so far. Beyond those new features, you know, it pretty much feels like my iPhone 5. So it's an S upgrade. It's a significant S upgrade. But I think if you're the type of person who, you know, is willing to wait another year, wait for the iPhone 6, I think we're going to see even more great features in there. It will be interesting to see how Touch ID expands and maybe becomes more useful, especially if Apple opens it up to third-party developers and for more features and functionality. I haven't really been able to get the iTunes purchases to, I can't figure out how to make that work. It certainly doesn't work for just logging into your Apple ID. There's a couple places where it's popped up and said, hey, you need to log into your Apple ID. I was hoping I could use my fingerprint in the Touch ID sensor for that. That didn't seem to work. It seems to be exclusively for making purchases or in-app purchases, and I haven't had a chance to try it there yet. So I'll report later on how that works for me. But if you want to share any of your experiences, go ahead and shoot me an email, mattcast@gmail.com. And I know we're getting kind of close to that 2-hour mark on this episode, but I do have one more thing that I just feel I have to talk to you about before I leave you, and that is iTunes 11.1. That update was released to mainly support iOS 7. It brought iOS 7 compatibility to iTunes, also added the iTunes Radio functionality to iTunes, as well as a new Genius Shuffle feature. All cool stuff, but as many of you have come to discover, iTunes 11.1 also significantly changed the podcast section of iTunes in some pretty extreme ways, and in ways that I'm hearing a lot of you don't like, and there's a couple of things in here that I don't like as well. It now works a lot more like Apple's podcast app, and you probably know if you listen to the show, I'm not a huge fan of Apple's podcast app. It's getting better and it's growing on me, but it's still, I think, got a ways to go. But the key with iTunes 11 and the podcast app is they're now intimately linked. It syncs the two together via your iTunes store account and your iTunes store Apple ID, not your iCloud ID. That's different. It's your Apple iTunes store ID. And for a lot of people, this has created some frustration. It's created a bad experience. Some of you have reported to me that when it synced everything up, some older shows where you had saved episodes in your iTunes account, you had episodes deleted. Luckily, I didn't have that experience. It seemed to retain those things for me. But it did merge a bunch of my subscriptions. My wife and I share an iTunes Apple ID for our iTunes purchases. And so our podcast subscriptions got merged. I saw all of her podcast subscriptions now in my iTunes and vice versa, which is very frustrating. We don't want commingled podcasts, but if we're going to share an iTunes Apple ID, we really have no choice at this point. One tip as far as it maybe not deleting your older podcasts, if you want to hold on to older podcasts in iTunes and you have a big collection of podcasts, somebody recommended that you go into the podcast episodes, choose Get Info on the episode and go to the Options tab and change the media kind from podcast to something else. They recommended audiobooks if you have spoken shows or maybe music for music shows. I think you can use music for all of them. And what that will do is it'll move that episode into the music or the audiobook section of iTunes out of the podcast section. And that way, podcasts can't tweak or mess with it. You can sort of archive those off into another part of your iTunes library. Be aware, though, if you do this, that it will likely re-download some of the podcast episodes you already have there. At that point, you can just delete them because you've got them saved off in another location in your library. But it just overall complicates things. And now everything syncs. So you're going to sync between the podcast app and the iTunes and iTunes directly. That means no more sort of direct downloading. I guess it still downloads the stuff from the iTunes store, but you know how you have that whole setting under your device? So in devices, and somebody correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I played around with it a lot. If you go into the device, you can still get into the podcast options, and there you have all your podcasts that you know you can subscribe to. You can tell it how many you want to sync to your device and how many you want to keep on your device and all that stuff. None of those settings seem to apply anymore under iTunes 11, even though they're still there. So I don't know why Apple just didn't blow those away or get rid of them. I don't know what they do. If you can figure out what they do, please let me know. I'm probably missing something obvious here. But I tweaked all kinds of settings. I played around with it, and I could not get it to do anything. I even tried turning off the podcast subscription and sync settings. So if you do not want your podcast to sync between your iOS device and an iTunes library, you can actually turn those options off both on the device and in the podcast settings and also in iTunes. On your device, you go into settings, you go under podcasts, there's a sync subscriptions toggle. Just set that to off, and then that device will no longer sync any of its subscriptions. It's going to function autonomously. If you want to do the same thing for your iTunes library, you go into iTunes preferences under store, and there's a checkbox that says sync podcast subscriptions and settings. Once disconnected from your iTunes and podcast, those things are going to be independent. A change on one is not going to impact the other. So if you don't want to have that happen, just do that, and then you'll be managing each thing separately in a separate location. Like I said, that didn't seem to affect my ability to use the podcast settings under the device to actually sync stuff up. So I don't know what's going on there. Another frustration is that if you have protected feeds, like the MacCast member, if you're a MacCast member subscriber, if you're subscribed in iTunes, those still do not sync. So that will not sync over to your iOS device. Now, you can subscribe directly to a protected feed, to a subscription feed in the podcast app, but it takes that trick that I've talked about in the past. If you need instructions for it, email me and I'll let you know how it works. I can send you some instructions. It's actually a text expander snippet that I have that'll automatically send that to you. So don't worry about bothering me. I can get that to you pretty quick. But basically, you have to include your username and password in the feed URL. So it's going to be clear there in the URL, which I don't like from a security standpoint, but you can get it to work. And you then plug that URL into the search field in the podcast app, because it doesn't have a way to manually add a feed. But the trick is you can manually add a feed by putting the feed into the search box, because that makes a lot of sense. But you put that in there and you hit search, and it'll actually subscribe you to the podcast. And if you have your credentials in there for your protected feed, it will send that stuff along and it'll allow you to subscribe in the app. So you can get it to work, but it will not just sync across, even with the new syncing all set up. Again, kind of frustrating. The other huge frustration that I'm hearing about from a lot of people is that they changed how the list view works in the podcast section. It used to be if you were using the list view and you had all of the podcasts there, you could go and you could delete, you know, several of them that you've already listened to and get them out of the list view, and they would go away. The list view now shows everything that is either local or still in the cloud. So if it's in the podcast feed, you're going to see all of those episodes, and you cannot delete or remove them. You cannot change them. So it's forcing you to go over and use the My Podcasts tab. So in the My Podcast view, you can delete podcasts that you've already listened to. They'll get removed from there. If you want to see older episodes that are in the feed. In that view, there's actually an old episodes button. You can click on that and you can get a view of the other episodes that are available within the feed. But that's how you do it. If you just, with this list view, you absolutely don't like it. You don't like the new way that it's set up and you can only see all of the podcasts and you want to blow the list view away out of the iTunes interface completely, you actually can do that. You can go into iTunes preferences under general and there's a checkbox that says show list view for all media. If you uncheck that, then the whole list view will go away. Not just from the podcast section though, it will be blown away from all of your media sections. So it affects music and movies and all the other places. So if you want to have list view, it's an all or nothing across all of your media, unfortunately. But if you just, if it just bugs you that they changed it and you want to get rid of it, that's how you can do that. But they really tweaked around with the podcast once again. I don't know if ultimately this is going to be good or bad. Right now, I know a lot of people are frustrated by the change. I think we'll eventually all get used to it, and maybe it's all going to become clear what Apple is doing. But I will tell you, Marco Arment, the maker of Instapaper, announced in Portland this week that he is developing a podcast app of his own because he's been frustrated that none of them that are out there really meet his needs. I hope he's doing one not just for iOS, but also for the Mac. I haven't looked into and read the details, but that shows some promise. Maybe we're going to have a third party actually create the ultimate podcast app. And I think, you know, we just need to have iPod or X come back. I'm going to have to talk to some people and find out if we can't make that happen. You guys remember iPod or X? Awesome, awesome app by a couple of great developers who I actually know. So I'm going to maybe go talk to them and see if they won't consider that. What we really need, though, too, is a better podcast directory than iTunes. iTunes has kind of become the de facto standard. I think there's now an opportunity for us to move back away and get the thing that we really want. But maybe I'm just starting the seeds of a revolution. Yeah, you think that's what's going on? You want to join me? Anyway, all right, there's the podcast thing. I think we need to be done. We've gone pretty long in this episode. Before I leave you, I do need to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors. Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label, Text Expander Touch, and also PDF Pen for iPhone and iPad. Check out all of their stuff. Get more information and details over at smilesoftware.com. I think they have a new app that's out. Maybe I'll tell you more about that next time, but you might check the website. There's probably something new available from Smile, so go take a look. Transporter by Connected Data. You can get all the benefits of cloud storage, but with the security and control, the privacy of a physical hard drive or NAS. If you want to get 10% off your own personal cloud and a transporter, you can use the code MACCAST over at filetransporter.com/MACCAST. Save 10% and get yourself a really cool transporter. Gazelle, hey, you want to get that new iPhone? You can get some cash for your old gadgets. You can find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple products are worth over at gazelle.com. They give you cash for your old device. That's cash you can use to buy your new iPhone 5C or 5S. It's a good deal, and I'm sending my stuff into Gazelle this week. It's actually how I'm funding my iPhone 5S purchase. So sold them a 4 and a 4S, and it was a good deal. So check it out, gazelle.com. And Squarespace, it's the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, online portfolio, or blog. You can get a free trial or this month. If you've been holding off, you want to sign up for Squarespace this month because just this month, they're offering 20% off. That's double our normal offer. Just head to squarespace.com. When you make your purchase, use the offer code MACCAST9. Hurry up because you just have a little bit more time left in this month, a few more days to go. Sign up. You won't be disappointed. Squarespace is really cool. It makes it really, really easy to get a great website. So squarespace.com, and a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the MacCast. Big thank you to you for your support, for staying subscribed. I love hearing from you. You guys always send in great comments and questions. You can send those to maccast@gmail.com. You can also call in on the listener hotline. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. You can leave voicemail there. You can also leave voicemail on Skype. My Skype address is the MacCast. And if you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you can find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. While you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. And you want to follow me online on Twitter. Actually, this week I posted my iPhone 5S unboxing photos and videos. You can find links to those on maccast.com. You'll also find links on Twitter, twitter.com/maccast. You'll find links on the MacCast Facebook page at facebook.com/themaccast, and also on the MacCast Google Plus community. So you should have no trouble finding that stuff. Follow me any one of those places. That's where I post this kind of stuff between shows, anything that I'm doing, little photos, cool software and stuff that I find as I'm doing my research for the show, cool new products and things like that. So if you want to know what I'm kind of finding that's interesting, Mac and Apple related, follow me online, social media, and I look forward to seeing you there. But until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.